Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. This is the last day of classes before fall break at ISU, so students and faculty alike are very glad about that. Students will get a little break before they come back and then face exams and final papers and projects, which can be a stressful time. Some students at ISU have an added stress of not knowing what is going to happen with the DACA program. That's the Deferred Action for Child Arrivals, which has allowed many immigrants to work and to attend college. So later in the show, we'll be talking about DACA with Cornelia Flora, Gabriella Flora, and Jeanette Vizguerra, and they will tell us about a DACA dinner that will be held in Ames this evening. Also on today's show, we'll have an interview with Riley Drake, one of the organizers of a series of anti-racism presentations and workshops that will be happening over the next few months in Ames. And Dennis Hart will be back next week with his weekly news roundup. As you can tell, our show today will combine local and national issues, which is what we do here on Local Talk and on KHOI in general. If you're a regular listener, you know that we are in the midst of our fall membership drive. This is the time of year when we ask you to step up and support KHOI. Just imagine what would be missing from your life if it were not for KHOI. Imagine if there were no Democracy Now! To listen to, or no Donna Lana Show. Imagine life without Rebel Music Radio, or without Rock of Ages, and worst of all, without Local Talk. If you value these shows, or if you have other favorites, call now or go to our website to make a donation or become a member. Basic membership is $55, but we would be happy to accept a $100 donation or any other amount. For $250, you can become a friend of KHOI, and that can be spread over 12 months if that works better for you. If you're already a member, consider renewing or move up to a higher level of support. You can do all of this by calling the station, 515-292-2878, or you can text us, 515-200-7758, or you can pledge securely online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Or a way that a lot of people like to become members or make a donation is to walk right through the door at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames. That way we get to meet them and they get to meet us. They can tell us what they like about KHOI and what they want more of. So however you want to do it, we just ask you to become a member. We also want to tell you about a party that's going to be happening here at KHOI on Sunday afternoon. There will be food and music and an all-around good time. The theme is Friendsgiving, and it's our way of saying thanks to all of you for your support. You can meet some of our show hosts, check out the renovation of our second broadcast studio. The party will be on Sunday, November 19th at 3 p.m. at the station at 410 Douglas. As you probably know, our Local Talk theme music is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards, and Tom Richards will be performing at the party for us at KHOI on Sunday.
I wrote this song down at the bottom of the Martin Marietta Mine. I was driving a truck down there, and you do have occasion to sit in the darkness and in fear, and this is what was running through my head. It's a song, it's supposed to be encouragement. When your pathway becomes narrow and you're far from home, come back home, then we'll all come to see you, journey on that weary road to freedom, when all the fighting's done, think of when you'll return home. Then we'll all come to see you with our arms open wide, and we'll love you and we'll keep you when your footsteps bring you home. Crossroad where it's time to lay your life down. Oh, and measure out your love as a sacrifice for freedom, and the angels take you home. They'll all come to meet you. Heaven's gates open wide, and they'll love you and they'll keep you when the angels take you home. Then we'll all our arms open wide, and we'll love you and we'll keep you when your footsteps bring you home.
That was Tom Richards, a local musician who calls his music Folkabilia. He will be performing at the Friendsgiving celebration on Sunday at KHOI at 3 o'clock. At that event, we're going to be honoring some very special people who have meant a great deal to KHOI. We'll be honoring Paul Nelson, who has been the engineer helping to build KHOI practically since its inception. We will also honor Janet Kloss, who has been a loyal donor to KHOI and the person responsible for the Community Bookshelf, one of our longest-running shows. The KHOI studio is being renamed and dedicated to Janet, so there will be a tribute to that on Sunday. And we will also honor B.J. Cairns, who recently passed away, but who remains with us as we continue to broadcast episodes of her signature show called An Evening with Elizabeth. The party on Sunday marks that we are nearing the end of our fall fundraising drive. So if you have not made a donation or contributed, you still have time.
My bark of life was tumbling down, troubled stream of time. When first I saw your smiling face, was in its prime. I'll never forget where'er I roam, ever you might be. Misfortune nursed me as her child, loved me fondly too. I would have had a broken heart had it not been for you. I'll never forget where'er I roam, ever you might be. If ever I have had a
That was another Tom Richards song, and he'll be performing at KHOI on Sunday at 3 p.m. as part of our Friendsgiving, which is our way to say thanks to all of you for your support of community radio. And just to repeat those numbers, it's fundraising time, so become a member at the $55 level or whatever level works for you. Call now, 515-292-2878, or text us at 515-200-7758, or go to our website, khoifm.org, or come on down to the stations while you're out and about today and meet us in person and become a member that way. And now we've been joined in the studio by Alex Fafar from the Ames Historical Society. Thanks for coming in, Alex.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And yesterday when I stopped by the Ames History Center, which is our neighbor right here on Douglas, you were busy cutting and gluing and constructing a new exhibit. What are you working on?
Yeah, we've been really busy. This is, I think we're in the second week now of installation of Ames High, Aiming High Through the Years. So
Ames High, Aiming High Through the Years.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's their one of their old sayings they used to have. They used, I think it started back in the 1930s. It was a contest and they got came up with. And I believe it was painted on the old track, one end of the track field that used to be where East Hy-Vee is today. That used to be where the sports complex was for Ames High for many years. So they had it painted kind of on the back end of the track there, misspelled, but it was still there.
Yeah, because they used the H-I for the Ames High.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was current back in 40s and 50s.
Trendy.
To abbreviate high school H-I, yeah. So they had it opposite. They had Ames High, Ames H-I.
So tell us more about this exhibit.
Yeah, we've been busy working on this for quite a few months now. So we're going to cover high school life in Ames throughout the 150 years it's been pretty much going on since 1870 when the school district formed. We don't get our real first high school built building until the 1881 is what we consider Ames High number one is what we've called it. It's very catchy, I know.
It didn't have a name other than that.
Just Central is what it went by. But then they build a new high school building across the street and then they decide to call that Central. And then they tear down the other one and build a new one and call that one Central. So you got to be, when you talk to people about Ames High and they say they went to Central, you have to be very...
What's the Central number one or Central number two?
You have to dig a little bit, ask a few questions, which side of the street was it on, that kind of a thing.
Did you know all this history about Ames High School?
I think we had to do a lot of digging. We knew we had a couple stories through, you know, volunteers, things we pick up through the years. So I think we had a lot of information primarily about Ames High number three, and that is our current City Hall building. So we have a lot of our members went to that high school, and we know quite a bit about the new one, too. I didn't go to Ames High here, so I had a lot to learn about the 70s, 80s, 90s that was going on, stuff like the Madrigal Dinner. So we had a fun little article talking about that and the boar's head that they used for many years. So I had a lot of catching up to do on the more recent stuff, to be honest.
And so the exhibit is going to have images of the actual buildings.
Yeah, we're doing four big blow-ups of each building, and there'll be panels kind of over top of it. So you, unfortunately, won't be able to see the entire building, but you get the good feel of it, and that picture will be repeated on the main intro panel for each building. So covering the main four.
And then what other kind of information did you dig up that will be included?
We broke it down into five categories for each building. So we'll be talking about activities and clubs, social life, athletics, covering things quite like that. And so each one will kind of have what was important in that era. And so we'll be, you know, earlier clubs. I did a lot of research on the first high school building, which was in the 1880s to 1911. And we didn't have a lot of information on it just because the yearbook didn't start until the next building. So we had a lot of digging through newspaper articles, trying to figure out what they did for fun, because some years there's only one year, for example, 1892, there's only one Ames High graduate that year. So there's only one girl that qualified to graduate that year. And, you know, this is in an era when high school wasn't a necessity.
Yeah.
You could actually go to Iowa State College without technically graduating high school. It was kind of weird. You had to take an entrance exam. It's just not quite as regulated as we have today with high school graduation. We have to meet all these requirements. Sometimes kids could get away with not taking a class if the teacher thought they were smart enough, essentially.
So getting that diploma was not the norm the way it is today.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it's a little bit of a different system to think about. But, you know, it's going back to more of the farm era where a lot of people were just going to country schools and getting an eighth grade education. So there were some kids, you know, in town that were trying to really, you know, knew they wanted to go to college maybe. And so they were able to pursue a high school degree at Ames High.
Is the high school now the largest it's ever been in terms of enrollment? Has it been growing continually till now?
I would guess yes, at least at the current point. Maybe last year was a little bit bigger than this one. I've not checked the statistics myself. We should know, because we're actually going to have one part of this exhibit, too, is we're going to have an entire wall that's going to have every Ames High graduate listed. So I don't know if maybe some of you went down to the, I think it was the Iowa State Fair maybe 3 years ago or something like that. They did every ISU graduate on the wall. And so we're going to do every Ames High one. It's something like 25, 26,000 names that are going to be printed and all put up there in alphabetical order, so you can come up and find yourself, your grandparents, your neighbor from next door, anybody.
That's going to take up a lot of space.
It's going to take up a little space. We're still planning that part out and getting that part designed a little bit, but it's going to fit up there. We're going to make it work.
And had you been planning this exhibit before there was talk of possibly building a new high school, or is that the reason you decided to do this?
Yeah, actually, I got that question a few days ago. Sometimes when we get this far down the line, the exhibit, we have to go back and think, how did we get this idea? And I think we had started this just before that happened. A lot of times when we try to do an exhibit, we look at not only what's current, but what do we have that we can show off? That's the main thing, too. What exhibit materials, information, artifacts do we have that we can center an exhibit around? So this one just worked out really nicely with the new exhibit coming up. So we will have, there'll be a little panel also covering information about the new one. So we'll kind of update that randomly as things get decided. But we'll have a little panel up there describing at least some of the proposals now.
Is there anything else that people can look forward to that you haven't mentioned when they come to see the exhibit?
We'll be opening on December 1st, so we got a few weeks here yet. We're still planning it out. One of the heavier objects that'll be in there, I just went yesterday over to the Alumni Center with Bill Ripp. They're allowing us to have on loan the Ames Boone Victory Bell. So this was a traveling trophy that it is really, it's a bell on a big wood plank. And every year it got passed between Ames or Boone, whoever won the football game that year. And it stopped when we stopped playing Boone, when we moved up to a bigger conference a couple years back. So it's kind of a tradition that's kind of the end of the tradition. But prior to that, there was a thing called the Green Jug that was there in the 1940s. And it was essentially the same thing, but it was a ceramic jug that they wrote the scores on every year. And it was just a passing trophy. And one day it just disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to it.
And you haven't been able to locate it.
There's some rumors about what happened to it, but nothing has ever surfaced. No little shards or anything of it have ever turned up. So
right. Well, if people out there know anything about it, they should contact you.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
It could become part of the exhibit.
Exactly, yeah. If you have the green jug, let us know. We'd happily take it.
That would be cool. And so remind people where you're located and the time and when it's going to start this new exhibit.
Sure. So we're at 416 Douglas. That's at 5th and Douglas near the KHOI, Octagon, Library, Adams Funeral Home, right on the corner there. And the exhibit will be opening up on December 1st. Our hours are 10 to 4 on Tuesday through Saturday. So if you can't come in on that Friday, the opening day, you can come in on Saturday, and we'll be there from 10 to 4.
And how long is this exhibit going to be up?
This one will be up until August. So okay. We usually put them up about 9 months or so to make sure everyone gets a good chance to see them, and we'll get our summer visitors in to come check it out. So
okay, so it'll be up a long time.
It'll be up a little long time there, yeah.
Okay. So, Alex, I wanted to ask you one other thing. You heard me doing some fundraising before. We want people to become members and contribute to KHOY because we think it's a valuable resource. And you come on each month representing the Historical Society. Why do you think it's worthwhile for your time to come on each month?
Well, I think it's a great way to get our information out there, let everybody know what's going on. This is such a good community platform. You know, it's unusual. It's a little different from, you know, like WOI, where you might get some same news information, but you're not getting that great local coverage about topics that really affect people in Ames, Story County, the local area here. So I think it's a really good platform for people to be able to come on, too. You guys have guests on every day, almost every hour, I'm sure, around here, where it's a great platform for them to be able to talk about current issues and things like that.
So if you hear that and you want to keep that going, become a member. So, Alex, thanks very much. And we appreciate you coming on today and each month to update our listeners about what's going on at the Ames History Center.
No problem. We'll see you in a month.
You may have seen signs around town for a series of anti-racism workshops being held at the Ames Library over the next few months. We were interested in learning more about them and about the group that has organized this series, which is called ARC. So I spoke with Riley Drake, one of the members of ARC, and she explains what ARC stands for, and she tells us about that group and the work that they do.
ARC is a group that was originally established in Des Moines, Iowa. It stands for Anti-Racism Collaborative, and the original ARC was founded because there was a group of women who determined that their goal was to work with each other to promote what is called radical whiteness. And radical whiteness is where those individuals have really examined themselves and the role that being white plays in the worlds that they live in and how it affects their relationships with other people. And so their goal was really to hold one another accountable and to help each other to learn. And so through this process, they actually had developed a speaker series a couple of years ago, and I was able to attend some of those speakers in Des Moines. And then a leader from the ARC of Des Moines, whose name is Petra Lang, contacted me and asked if I wanted to join her ARC. From there, we talked a little bit further, and just the travel was difficult getting to Des Moines for the meetings. So we discussed the possibility of starting an ARC in Ames. Mm-hmm. I reached out to a number of colleagues and other friends of mine, and we established ARC of Ames about 2 years ago.
Who's involved? Is it teachers exclusively or other people?
ARC right now is primarily composed of teachers, school counselors, and other staff members in the Ames Community Schools area. We have about 10 to 13 people who attend meetings regularly or are involved in some of our social media contact and support that we have set up as well. Right now, ARC is a closed group, meaning that we hold space for a smaller group so that we can be really intentional and vulnerable with each other. But at the same time, we have had a lot of conversations lately about how we might set up different types of ARC groups that are kind of sister groups to ARC in different ways where there are different goals. Some of our members are really passionate about activism and want to be more involved in some of that work. And so there's been talk of having a separate group where other people who were interested in that could also join. There is also a part of ARC where the people or the members are feeling as if they need to learn a lot more. And so they're more interested in book studies and reading and deeper discussion that challenges their mindsets. And so they are interested in hosting and opening up some other book studies. So we're kind of in the talks right now of what the next step might be. But right now we are kind of a closed group that's really interested in feedback and what other people might be interested in too.
I'm curious about the relationship then between this group and the Ames schools.
My principal has been really supportive of the work of ARC of Ames. In fact, she has planned to attend some of the speakers from our speaker series. She is also part of our book club, Waking Up White, and she's joined that group. I think that we, in general, just naturally tend to always consider things from that critical or that anti-racist lens in the work that we do. So we don't necessarily have a connection to school, but just as teachers, school counselors, leaders in our building, or our position, whatever that may be, we naturally take on that lens. And so far, it has been very appreciated and supportive in our work.
And so you mentioned the speaker series. So tell us more about that.
The ARC Speaker Series is a collection of lectures and workshops that are free to the public. This is actually the kind of fruits of two years worth of work and labor. We, over that amount of time, have made a lot of connections with different people, a lot of experts who are very knowledgeable in their content areas. And we decided that in order to truly act out the principles that we have in place for ARC, it was important that we brought some of this work to our community and that we can really try to meet people where they are. So the series is set up developmentally and sequentially in that the first speaker began talking about cultural competence and cultural proficiency, really what that means. The second speaker then addressed privilege and what that looks like in our world and how it manifests in ways that we don't always even notice. Our third speaker will be talking about the school to prison pipeline and how some of the ways that we manage behavior in schools actually contributes to higher incarceration rates for different populations of people, specifically Black people and brown people. And so we are continuing on to, hopefully, participants who have joined us from the beginning to the end will be at a place at the end where we can really start to come together and develop some action steps for things that we think we can do in our community and ways that we can support the ongoing work of organizations and groups that have been doing this work for a long time already. I think that as white people, it's important that we educate ourselves and that we pull in other white people to educate them. There are people within our community who have a lot of knowledge and are willing to share that knowledge with people. And so this was an opportunity to help inform our community and help to provide a place for them to actually spring forth and affect change.
So what audience are you recruiting? Who do you hope comes to these sessions?
We hope anyone who has a desire to learn about anti-racism, racism, whiteness will come to these sessions. We have had people of ages that have ranged from 6 years old at one of the speaker series events all the way up to 60 years old. We have people of different backgrounds, different races, different religions, different genders, different gender identities who have come to the event so far. I think that no matter who or where you are, especially no matter where you are in terms of your understanding of what race or racism is or what anti-racism is, we really should never be at a place where we believe that we're fully comfortable or that we know everything, because we certainly don't. And as soon as we kind of get to that point where we think we know, that's when we really start to mess up. And so that's one of the things that we've continued hearing from discussion afterward, after we've had speakers, is that people said, wow, I was really starting to get too comfortable. You know, I needed to make myself a little uncomfortable again. And I think that the speaker series is really designed for that too.
And how was the turnout at the first two?
The first workshop was smaller in participation, but that was really conducive to some great discussion. People were able to talk a lot and to share. There were quite a few more people at our second speaker, and there were people there who were parents who have children who are biracial, and they came to learn for those reasons. There were teachers who came to learn because they're concerned about supporting their students in their classroom. There were other people that were there. They're students at Iowa State, and they're just interested in learning more. So I think that the more that we talk about it, the more that it grows, I anticipate higher numbers at the upcoming events.
Tell us when the next one is and where people can get more information.
The next event is December 16th at the Ames Public Library in the Dan Foss Room from 1 to 3 p.m. Dr. Monique Benkin will be speaking to the school-to-prison pipeline. There are events in January, January 15th. There's another in February, February 27th. And our final event is March 4th. If you're interested, you can get more information from Ames Public Library. They have information that's available there. You can also get information by visiting or messaging our Arc of Ames group on Facebook. And if you have any further questions about that, you can certainly contact me. You can contact me at my email, rdrake, that's R-D-R-A-K-E, at iastate.edu.
You mentioned a community book study. Is that something that ARC has put together as well? And can you explain that?
The community book study is something that I kind of took on as my own project because I thought it was something that was really important. But the ARC of Ames is also very involved with that project. So we have a number of participants within that study who are also members of ARC. The purpose for the book club is really for people who are white, and it's really for people to investigate some of their, a lot of times, well-intended steps, action steps, thoughts, and to help them to see the ways that even as a well-intended white person, we can be marginalizing or we can be oppressing people. And so the group has had one session so far. We met on the second Tuesday of October. We're meeting again this coming Tuesday, the 14th. And that is at 7 o'clock at the Ames Public Library. And again, all are welcome.
And they should read the book in advance if people want to come. And hopefully the book is available maybe at the library.
Yes, actually, the library has had such a big request for the book that they've ordered more copies of it, so there are copies available.
You're really doing a lot of work around making people more aware of racism and anti-racism actions that they can be involved in. Why get so involved? Why try to do so much to help educate people?
I think that's a question that a lot of people ask, and I also ask myself. I think just for as long as I have been alive, I have always sought out situations of injustice or what I deemed or thought was unfair. And I always isolated those events and then really tried to understand them. And I think I see students doing that a lot. You know, at the elementary school that I work at, I see students who often are saying, well, that's unfair. And why is it that way? And I think so often as adults, one of our first responses is to write it off as because I say so or because I said so. When in reality, when I hear a student say that, my first thought is it fair? Is it okay? Is that just? And the person who I am has always asked those questions and has always wanted to know what the answers are. And when I ask these questions, when I first kind of became aware of experiences of people who I had never understood the experiences of before, I realized that I didn't have any answers. And if I was struggling with not having answers, what was life like for people who have lived their entire lives that way and have never been able to have answers? And especially with the way that historically populations of people have been oppressed, and there still really aren't any answers, and we still have examples of racism and other types of oppression that exist, and people are impacted by it daily. So I think I'm on a mission to get answers, and I think I'm on a mission to find ways that throughout history and even presently, people can find and be at peace and there can be some sort of resolution. I know that I don't necessarily have answers. I think that the answers are really going to be found in the communities that have been doing this work for a long time. I think that they have the answers. They know what the answers are. And it's our job, it's my job to create a space for that to take place.
Any thoughts of what ARC is going to do next?
I don't see ARC slowing down anytime soon. I think that we all have different passions, and those passions are going to continue to take us in different places. One of the great things about ARC, though, is that we always come back together, and we always support each other in whatever process we're going through or whatever we need at the time. I see us becoming more involved in some of the community organizations that are already established in Ames that are doing great work. In fact, we are partnering with Inclusive Ames for some work for the OUCH training that's on February 27th. We are partnering with Ames Public Library. They've been wonderful in terms of what they've been able to provide. And I think that, again, there's so many places that are doing such great work that we often don't hear about, we don't know about. So our part of our next mission is really finding how can we connect. And I think, again, the more people who come together, we can have a greater impact.
That was Riley Drake, a school counselor at Sawyer Elementary School in Ames and one of the founders of the Ames ARC, which stands for Anti-Racism Collaborative. Riley mentioned a book study group, and the next meeting of that group will be on December 12th at the Ames Library. And you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. And we now have new guests with us in the studio, so let me introduce them. We have Cornelia Flora, Distinguished Professor of Sociology Emeritus from Iowa State University. Gabriella Flora, related, Program Director for the American Friends Service Committee in Denver, and who will be speaking at an event tonight that you're going to be talking about. And Jeanette Vizgueta, founder of Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition and one of Time Magazine's most influential people of 2017, who will also be speaking tonight and at other events over the weekend. Let's start there with the DACA dinner, as I believe it's being called, that's happening tonight. Cornelia, can you start?
Yes. The United Church of Christ at 6th and Kellogg is hosting a DACA dinner. DACA stands for Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals. And these are people who were brought to the country as children, but without the proper documentation and papers. We're having this dinner because we're having a confluence of serious threats to our vibrant immigrant communities. Not because most of our immigrants are undocumented, but many of them are related to people who are not documented. So it's a climate of fear. So we're going to talk about three different issues there that are all becoming more and more urgent in this community. And we're part of a coalition in Story County through AMOS, Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy, and a number of communities of faith that are concerned about, first, the loss of temporary protective status that is happening for those who came. It's already happened for those who came from Nicaragua and Honduras, which, particularly with Honduras, going back to this country that is really undergoing serious problems, would be extremely difficult, and they're there, and we're afraid it's also going to happen to people from Haiti and El Salvador. The temporary protective status was given when these countries either had a terrible natural disaster, as an earthquake in Haiti, or due to severe internal strife. We're also concerned about our DACA students. They're not just students. Mm-hmm. In fact, a large proportion of them are in the workforce, some are students and in the workforce, who are a vital part of our economy here in Iowa and around the nation. And finally, we're concerned about sanctuary, those facing immediate deportation who need some place where they can go. So a number of the churches are working together to say, how can we be supportive of people who are afraid of what is going to be happening to them to rip their families apart.
So this
the potluck, once again, okay. is going to be a way to learn more about it. We will have some DACA students there who will talk to us. Gabriella will talk. Jeanette will talk. So we can begin to learn what's happening with our broken immigration policy, and what can we do locally, as well as how can we influence our legislators to finally come forward with comprehensive immigration reform. 6 o'clock, please bring something to share. If you don't have something to share, come anyway. If you can bring your own place services, that's great too. Mm-hmm. But it should be good food, good company, and a really chance to consider these major, major issues.
So a great opportunity for people to learn and become informed both about the issues and to hear personal experiences of how they affect people. And we'll have you repeat that time and place again at the end. So if people didn't catch that, they'll catch it. And Gabriella, you work for the American Friends Service Committee in Denver. Can you tell us a bit about what your role is there and what the work is that you do?
Yes. The American Friends Service Committee, actually, we're celebrating our 100th anniversary this year, and that is just to give a little plug for what's happening tomorrow in Des Moines, where Jeanette is here, and I am here because we're here to celebrate that 100 years of AFSC, and Jeanette will be the keynote speaker at our centennial celebration starting tomorrow, Saturday, at Grandview University at 2:30. We'll have registration, and there'll be workshops going on. Jeanette will be leading one on organizing. I'll be leading one with some folks from Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition in Denver, from one of the host congregations where Jeanette stayed. We'll be doing a workshop on that, and we'll have also the new General Secretary of AFSC will be speaking. So if you all can join us for that, that will be really important. AFSC in Denver, Colorado, our main focus is on immigrant rights. We've been working for the last 20 years organizing allies, and when deportations began to get so intense under the Obama administration, we once again began organizing directly with immigrants. And through our faith work, worked with Jeanette in co-founding the Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition. And then I coordinate the Not One More deportation table, which is comprised of folks who are fighting their deportation cases, where they lead their own cases but seek support from allies and from each other to fight this system that is profiting off of incarcerating people and is tearing families apart, and coming together to raise awareness around this issue, support those families for them to lead their cases, but also to bring into the public eye what is really happening. And that is a lot of what Sanctuary has done. And a lot of the amazing work that Jeanette has done over these many years has raised the issue, which is critically important. And then we also engage in policy both at the local, state, and national level. And we it was many months of work and really building on years of work. Our city and county passed a policy that came from the community. It didn't include everything we wanted to keep ICE out of local law enforcement and out of local activities, but we made significant strides. And in fact, just a week and a half ago, the city council approved $200,000 of city money to be seed funds for a legal defense fund of the city. And this is, again, building on years of work. And AFSC worked on this with immigrants, directly impacted folks, and organizations throughout the city.
Tell us more about the founding of the Sanctuary Coalition then, either Gabriella or Jeanette.
In 2013, I need go into Mexico. My mother is die. Later back, other time, I look at more options for support my case. My case is more difficult later back. I look an option, and my main is the existing sanctuary in other states. I need in Colorado. Yeah, I'm my pastor and the lab and me. Ready the process for maybe 3 months. Mm-hmm. Talk to different pastors, the different congregation, the multi-faith. Later, come in person, the American Friends Service work together. And later, 9 months, the very strong work, explain different congregation, different person, the legal parts, the money support for the immigrants, respond hundreds of questions. Mm-hmm. Later the 9 months, Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition is ready.
Mm-hmm.
It's ready in 2014. It's public. And later 3 months, the one first person uses
the first
sanctuary.
Person.
Yeah, the name is Arturo Garcia. He living in church for 9 months.
Uh-huh. Because he was at risk of being deported.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm taking different state removes in no need. And last year, I'm personal. I'm used for 86 days.
So you sought sanctuary yourself in a church in Denver.
I need living for 86 days in the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's good options, not only in Denver. Mm-hmm. In this moment, and around the country, have 800 churches. involved in sanctuary, have a close 100 person in sanctuary
right now.
As the and a half part is public cases, and other and a half part not as public. For a strategy or the people have scary, protect your families.
Yeah.
The Century Movement National is, in this moment, every day more big, more big, more big.
And these are people who lack legal documentation to be in the U.S. And so they're at risk of being deported, and that's been increasing more and more, from what I gather. And so they're seeking sanctuary. And you say some of them are doing it quietly for strategic reasons, and some are doing it more publicly to get attention and draw attention to this issue.
Sometimes it's good and very public for pushing and put more attention in the cases. And sometimes no, no, it's good.
Yeah.
And in all of the cases, ICE is notified, but whether it's public, is that that has shifted some. And so, as Jeanette said, under half of them are not public. I think it's really important to understand that this is a last resort. Nobody wants to have to go into a church where you can't leave. And Jeanette can share what a difficult thing that was. It's a, it's a very important option, and it is so wonderful that folks in Ames and in Des Moines and throughout the state of Iowa are organizing to be able to create this option for folks who are victims of the fact that we have no path for so many people in this country to gain legal status, and that we have a system that exploits people's labor and uses them and we benefit from their labor but does not allow people to have full status. And so the reason that sanctuary came about is because detentions and deportations are at levels, again, that started under the Obama administration, at levels we had never seen before. Now sanctuary becomes even more important because short-term options like stays of removal have basically gone away unless it is, you have, except for very short 30-day stays. And so a stay is when you're in deportation proceedings and you have and you're given, you're said, well, we'll stop your deportation.
It's kind of put on hold.
Put it on hold.
It doesn't go
away,
the proceedings. It's just a temporary reprieve.
Yeah. And so immigrants are organizing and fighting their cases and raising this issue. And that is people like Jeanette, like Arturo, who she mentioned, who, like Ingrid. Those are folks who have been, and many other folks across the country, those are folks in who have high-profile cases in the Denver area that have raised the issue and shown people that we have over 11 million people in this country who are part of our communities, and there is no legal option for them to stay in this country. And that is why people have had to resort to sanctuary, and it's an important step, but we want to get beyond that. We want all of our communities to be sanctuaries for everyone, where people can feel safe.
Yeah, if, for example, and my big daughter is DACA. In this moment, the future, the 800 young people, the people protect TPS, Salvadorian, Honduras, Nicaragua, and refuge the other countries, Haiti. I need the everybody work together for pushing the system. And this moment, this system affect very much, not only the immigrant people, it's the everybody. Everybody, the immigrant people were in the cleaning, construction, food, restaurants, and the farms. They don't have people. This country not work good. In this moment, it's important, very, very important, work together, everybody. Everybody.
Yeah. And many students, when there are students at ISU, and even in the high school, perhaps, who are current DACA recipients. And so their status is in danger now. Can you say a bit more about what's happening with DACA?
In this moment, the Congress worked and tried to put one legislation for protect young people. Maybe in January, Pat Santi.
But the DACA will, people will start start losing their status on March 6, 2018.
And if that, nothing is done.
And nothing is done. And that means about 915 people per day will lose their status and risk deportation. The
land-grant universities have joined together saying, we've got to retain DACA. This is terribly important for our universities and our communities. But we've not been very effective in getting mm-hmm. our congressional representatives yeah. to act on this.
And what American Friends Service Committee and Undocumented Youth, who are leading this charge, and many other organizations are saying is actually we don't need temporary status. The DREAM Act was a Band-Aid solution because undocumented students stood up and said to the Obama administration, we will not stand for these kinds of deportations anymore. And they took over, starting in the Denver area, young folks who didn't have status took over the Obama headquarters. And that led to President Obama providing DACA this 2-year temporary status. And that's true for temporary protected status also. I want to kind of look at the parallel between these two programs. TPS, temporary protected status, includes over 330,000 people across this country from 10 different countries who are here because of either natural disasters or severe political issues of which the United States has contributed to instability in many of the cases in their countries.
And some of them have been here
since
quite a long
90s.
Period of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of them actually before that, but TPS, mm-hmm. TPS as a general program began in the early 90s. And so these are folks, both DACA and TPS folks are folks who are integral parts of our community and very connected, and their whole lives are here. And for many of them, it is not safe for them to go back to their home countries, even though the United States is saying in some cases it is. And so we need not just temporary status. So rather than we need ISU, we need everyone standing up and standing for a clean DREAM Act, the DREAM Act that provides folks with permanent status to become citizens. And that is true with TPS too. So there's some federal legislation, including the American Promise Act, that would allow TPS recipients to gain status, to gain a path to citizenship.
The other part is very important. I need clean DREAM Act. No need put more money in the one wall cannot work good.
The wall, yeah.
No. The people know it's business for... I'm taking money for the wall and I'm put DACA back. No. The people knows business, knows product. It's humans.
Yeah.
Only humans.
Mm-hmm. It's not negotiable.
Yeah.
Walls for people.
Right.
The other thing that is of concern to me is we're contracting a huge number of private prisons to house immigrant prisoners. And this very much concerns me as a taxpayer and someone who is very concerned about human rights.
And Jeanette has spent time in the for-profit detention center in Aurora, Colorado, and it is not a good place to be.
Yes. I'm need here 3 times, and GOCCI, El Paso Processing Center is the... This system have one CORA for 400 people for day around the country. Mm-hmm. As the no as good put 100 people separate 1,400 people in detention, broke the families, mm-hmm. and the kids suffer very much.
And children are in those detention centers often by themselves, separated from their families.
Yeah. And there had been a lot of work done. And prior to 2014, most of the family centers had been closed. Mm-hmm. And then because there was mistreatment of folks along the border, we see a resurgence of family detentions. And actually that part, a big reason for that is because that is the most profitable thing for corporations. They gain more money out of incarcerating family members, including children, than anything else. And that is wrong. Mm-hmm. And we should not, that is immoral. Our budget is a moral document, and we should not be providing money to corporations, nor to public facilities, to line their pockets by incarcerating and separating families.
Well, there's much more, I think, that we could learn about this that we won't have time to get into. So remind our listener, tell us again about the event tonight so people can attend, so they can learn more and hear more, especially of personal experiences.
We're having a DACA dinner, which is a potluck, so bring something to share if you can. Come even if you can't have anything to share. Bring a place setting if you can. If not, we'll have it for you. Is it the United Church of Christ, UCC. We're at the corner of 6th and Kellogg, and we will be in the Fellowship Hall. So you could come in the back through the parking lot that's across the library.
And then tomorrow, Saturday, please come celebrate with AFSC, our 100-year anniversary, and hear Jeanette speak about organizing, and myself and some other folks from the Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition about sanctuary, and join us for Jeanette's keynote speech, where she'll talk about her experience in sanctuary and organizing across Colorado and across the country. And again, that will be at Grandview University tomorrow, starting at 2:30.
It's time to take action now.
Thank you very much for sharing all this with us today. I've been speaking with Cornelia Flora, sociology professor emeritus from Iowa State, Gabriella Flora, program director from AFSC in Denver, and Jeanette Vizguerra, founder of Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition. And people can hear more tonight. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to our earlier guests and interviewees, Riley Drake and Alex Fafar. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor, assisted by intern Jackie Norman. KHOI's membership drive is going on now, so it is a very good time to become a member. You can go to our website, khoifm.org, or you can call 515-292-2878. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.